Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. It's a special edition of the show. This is our snowed in February the 21st show, and we're having some frigid weather here, but it's hopefully you're inside and warm. And we want to welcome our guests tonight, George Hazel and Jim Fotherington, are both from the Pebbles, a Scottish Christian beat band from the 60s. It's my pleasure to have you guys on the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, John.
It's great to have you guys on. This is just such an amazing thing to me. We were talking a little bit before the show, and I've always been addicted to music. I just can't get enough of it. I love rock history and music history. And growing up in the 60s and the music of the 60s, and then, you know, seeing how music has progressed through the years into today's music, how things have changed so much. And we want to talk about that, how that, you know, the internet has changed everything. And we're talking tonight because of a lot of the technological advancements. But what I'd like to happen tonight is for the people that are listening, and this will be in podcast about 5 minutes after the show for people to listen to, and for people to know about this Christian beat movement that happened. And I had the pleasure of talking to Bill Davidson of the Joy Strings not too long ago, and we've got a couple of other interviews lined up in the future. And to me, this was something that I wish I would have known about, but I didn't. And now that I'm getting to know about it, it's so awesome, and the music is amazing. So what I'd like you guys to do is just kind of walk us through this time, when the band started and when you guys got interested in music, and how the whole music scene was in Scotland and in England, and how that influenced you, and how you used that sound, George and Jim, for to reach people for Jesus, which I think is the thing that amazes me the most, is using that. Because I always thought, you know, you had this type of music and maybe it was separate. You know, a lot of people didn't like rock music or didn't accept rock music. And to me, it's always interesting how that, you know, the church and different people used the music of the day to reach people. So let's start out, if you can, from the beginning and how the band started and how you guys got to know each other.
Okay, Jim, are you going to go first or me?
Well, I'll go first, George. George always credits me with having a better memory. That's probably because I'm 2 weeks younger than what George is. Well, it really started in the church. Four young teenage boys and four young teenage girls got together in the church, and we'd been watching the Joy Strings. I'm glad you mentioned them, John, because the Joy Strings were actually the inspiration to actually do this. Now, I believe the Joy Strings had started just a few years before 1964 as a group, singing some sort of unconventional stuff to what they were normally used to. And in 1964, they had their first hit. Now, it wasn't a huge hit, but it was a chart hit. I think it got to something like 32 in the UK charts. And they were quite inspirational to us in thinking, you know, it's time that worship was changed so that it was more attractive to young people. And so their sort of hit song, which was An Open Secret, it was called, was our inspiration to get together. And at first, of course, we just sang sort of upbeat songs before we, in particular, George and Ian started writing songs. So that's kind of really how we got started. Does that ring a bell with you, George? It's 50 years ago.
I know, it's frightening, isn't it? It's I got to know Jim, I suppose really, Jim, I think through the church football team, first of all, because we were both keen on football. I was playing the accordion in these days. I started playing the accordion when I was 10 years old. And I can remember meeting in my home, the front room of my house, and I had the piano accordion. Jim didn't have any drums at that time. I don't know if you remember, Jim, but I remember you playing with a couple of kitchen wooden spoons on a stool that my mother gave you. And then I think my father, who was a carpenter, turned a couple of drumsticks, which were totally inappropriate and unbalanced. But anyway, that was a pair of drumsticks. So we were pretty green, and we started getting into listening to a whole load of stuff. Jim's right, in terms of the Christian music, the Joy Strings were there. There wasn't a lot other stuff that wasn't that was rock kind of music of any description. It, you know, was four part harmonies and guys in evening suits and all that, you know, choirs and all that kind of stuff. But parallel to that, we had been listening obviously to the Beatles and Rolling Stones, Small Faces, all these bands, and beginning to, you know, getting into all that stuff. And I quickly realized, of course, that the piano accordion wasn't cool at all in the early 60s. So I swapped it. It was a lovely accordion to my, you know, I regret it now, but I swapped it for a guitar. And those that, if you don't know the piano accordion, the left-hand side and all the buttons are chords. So it was easy for me to make that transition to, I kind of self-taught the guitar. And then we just began, yeah, as Jim said, doing songs. Initially, we didn't write songs, but just playing together. We didn't have a bass guitar to begin with. Ian McNair, the other guy that I wrote that song, he knows the way that he just played. Ian was on guitar, and I was on piano accordion, then guitar, and then Jim on drum. There was another guy who was initially on the, I suppose you'd call it maracas, but it wasn't maracas. It was a salt tin with rice in it. That's the only thing we could afford in these days. So he was part of the percussion as well. So yeah, that was the beginnings. But I think one of the important things in the birth of all of this for us was that we began to play the kind of music that you just played because it was our music. It wasn't a case of, oh, we can use this for the church. We were Christians, but we played it because we liked it. It was our music. And as the music grew and we eventually got into blues and you know, more heavy rock later on, we grew kind of with it. It was just an expression of ourselves. We just played what we liked to play, and that obviously struck a chord with a whole lot of young people.
Now, did you get any resistance, George or Jim? Because every time you go into a new type of music or into a new generation of music, and sometimes you get that, you know, this isn't appropriate or this isn't what we think is right for, you know, church music. Did you get any of that?
Yeah, plenty.
Yes, we certainly did. Actually, it started within our own church, people saying, oh, what's this? We don't like drums getting brought onto the pulpit. Don't particularly like what you're playing. I mean, this, you know, we like our organ music here, and we have our old Sankey songs, as they were called in these days. And so we were very much pioneers. And although the Joy Strings had been seen on television, we were very much pioneers actually bringing this down to church level. So, yes, a great deal of resistance. And unknown to us at the time, it was the start of many, many years of resistance to our music.
Yeah.
So did that...
John.
Well, I was just wondering, because sometimes that, you know, when I did talk to Bill, and I've talked to quite a few other musicians about things like this, they know that it's that God doesn't just stay, like, the music isn't going to be the same way it was in the 1800s. You know, it's like music is this incredible ocean. It's this beautiful language, and heck, it can expand and it can grow. But sometimes, you know, like you were saying, Jim and George, people can put it in a box and think, well, this is the way it's supposed to be. And that's very interesting to me how you guys knew that was happening, but you also knew that this music was very, it was like the music you were saying, that was your music. It felt good to you to play it. Now, what was it that made you guys continue to play? You could have said, well, you know, I don't know, maybe they're right and maybe we'll stop doing it, but you continued to play it. And then the second part of this is going to be, you know, how you progressed as musicians together, because that's always a great question that I love to ask bands, because bands don't – I've seen bands come and bands go, but any band that lasts a while has always got my admiration, because it's always, you know, kind of an amazing thing. So how did you guys decide, okay, we're not really – we know that the opposition is there, but we're going to continue. And then how you progressed as a band.
Well, I think for me... Sorry, Jim.
No, go ahead, George.
I think for me, there was kind of three things. First of all, we enjoyed playing. We enjoyed being together, and it was fun playing. I think secondly, we knew the reaction we were getting from our generation, that this is the kind of music that they liked, and we could really share with them, both Christian and non-Christian. And I think thirdly, although we got a lot of opposition, we had good support. Our parents especially were very supportive. The minister was supportive, and we had people who, it was kind of a love-hate thing. There was a lot of people who said, "This is great what you're doing. Keep going." And a whole lot of other people who are saying, you know, this is kind of off the devil. And as
right.
we progressed, which we'll talk about in a minute, to kind of blues stuff and heavy rock stuff, the opposition got worse and more polarized, and we got more supporters and other people saying, you know, we definitely don't like this. This is, you know, we were really the, I suppose, Jim, it's fair to say, when we progressed to that, we were the first Christian blues band certainly in Scotland.
Yes.
At that time, but we were just progressing with our music.
Yes, it was strange. 1964, when we first sort of got the band together. We had two very good first gigs, because the first gig was in a Salvation Army hall. Now, they were used to using all sorts of instruments in the Salvation Army, obviously particularly brass, and they would have a big horn section. So we were very welcome there, because what we brought was what they already had. I mean, my first drum kit, for example, was actually a makeshift drum kit. I had a snare drum, which my father had put the money up for me to buy, and I then heard that a local Salvation Army hall were getting rid of their big bass drum, and I had to go out several miles in a bus and collect this great big bass drum and bring it onto a bus.
Oh, that's wild.
John, this bass drum was big. It was huge.
It was enormous. Now, I was a young teenager, and, you know, at that age, your street cred is quite important. But here was me bringing this big Salvation Army bass drum onto a bus. And people were looking as if to say, "What's that? What on earth has he got there?" And it wasn't really very cool. But anyway, that was my sort of start to putting a drum kit together. But the thing was, looking at the holistic picture, in 1964, the Beatles were absolutely sensational in the UK, as were the Rolling Stones. And, you know, everybody was talking about them. And it was a great time to be involved in music. And that's, I think we were inspired by the fact that on the secular scene, music was becoming something totally different. And we saw that in the Christian scene, things should change as well, except it was very difficult to do.
Now, did it also change, like with you guys, with the fashion too? Because that was a big part of it, you know, with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the different bands. I mean, not only did the music change, but the fashion changed. Did you guys keep up with that part of it as the Pebbles?
Yeah, we did. Our first, I think, Jim, our first uniform, as it were, was it green kind of long sleeve polo shirts?
Yes.
That right. And then we progressed to suits with lace kind of jabos, embarrassingly, on the front. And then once we got into, you know, Cream and Jimi Hendrix and people like that, we just wore anything. We were into bells and torn jeans and all sorts of gear after that. So yeah, it very much did change.
But that happened over quite a period of years. I mean, it wasn't probably till about 68 when we started thinking about, you know, what we're wearing is not very cool, and we need to keep up with the secular rock bands.
Now, when you guys were starting to play, there's a couple of things I'd like to know about. When you were playing, what venues did you play when you got yourself to a point where you were practicing, you felt confident to get out and start playing? Where did you start playing? Where were your venues?
Well, initially,
as I say,
sorry, go on, Jim. You know, you can remember better than me, probably.
As I say, our first gig was actually in a Salvation Army hall, and our second gig, we were invited to yet another Salvation Army hall. So these were quite easy gigs, but there's a wee funny story there that, naive as we were about the Salvation Army at the time, in the Salvation Army hall, the front row is always left empty. Now, we'd put our gear in earlier, set up, and had gone back out the door, and then we were invited to come down and play. And after we played, we just sat in the front row thinking, well, it's handy because we're going to go back up on the stage and play later on. So we were all sitting in the front row at the Salvation Army. And I remember getting a tap on the back from someone. I turned around and they said, "You're not meant to be sitting in the seat." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "It's called the mercy seat. You only go in there if you feel you want to confess your sins."
Oh.
So, maybe you don't remember that, George, but I was the one that got the tap on the back. So I've always remembered that, oh, that's the mercy seat. Better not sit there again.
But it's an interesting observation, John, because the first gigs we did were basically youth clubs. They were in churches. Church social type events, Salvation Army things. That's where we were initially. And as our music grew and our conviction grew, it and the music scene was changing. The Christian music scene was changing because more bands were starting. We gradually moved out of that into I suppose church based what would be called cafes. Cafe type venues in the high street, and then later on we did more of that, and we did concerts as well in concert halls, but we also latterly, and this was a good few years later, probably, I don't know, the late 60s, maybe early 70s, Jim, you can't really remember, we played in some pubs and student unions and clubs, things like that, so it progressed over the years.
Yes. That was certainly later on when, you know, the first few years we were very much focused on playing within church circles. And as George said, occasionally what became quite popular were coffee bars where a particular hall or venue would be rented for a night, turned into a coffee bar, or actually what it actually was a Christian coffee bar. And we would play, and others would go out onto the streets. It was called street fishing, and they would ask people if they would like to come in and hear this group playing. And, of course, after the group had finished playing and people were still sitting there, that was opportunity for some sort of witness program, some sort of sermon, a short talk about Christianity. So that's kind of how it started. And these coffee bars got very popular for the first few years.
And that's really interesting, too, because when I was talking to Bill Davidson, guys, they talked about that also. And they were, when things started opening up for them, they would play just about anywhere. Well, they would play anywhere. They told me that there was nowhere that they would say no to. And I think that that's a great thing. And today when I talk to young Christian bands and, you know, bands that are into, you know, there's just so many different styles of Christian music now that I think is amazing. And some are, you know, they have no problem playing anywhere at any festivals and things like that. And then you have the big division now where people talk about, you know, whether they're a Christian rock band or whether they're Christians in a rock band. And yeah. I think that's kind of an interesting thing, too, because I'm not going to be so naive as to say, I think, you know, just go anywhere you want to. I think you have to be pretty careful with that. But I also think that you should, if you have that direction and feel that spiritual lead, that you should do that. Now, how do you guys feel about that? And how did that feel to you? Because this was an amazing time for people that weren't there back in the 60s, like 63 to 65, 66. You know, people will say that was a renaissance of music that will never happen again. And in my opinion, I would have to agree with that. I think there were things going on musically that will never be compared to that.
Yeah,
talk about
kind of
that.
It was a kind of an alignment of the stars. In you know, before the kind of Beatles, and there was a whole load of R&B and stuff going on in America that the Beatles were learning from, and the Stones and
right.
people like that. But before that, we had kind of skiffle and big bands, and but a couple of things came together. The R&B stuff came together with, you know, people like the Beatles, but also for the first time was the mass-produced electric guitar that was affordable, notably Fender and Gibson. And that then and amplification to go with it, and that opened up at the same time a whole new music business. And it was just, as Jim said, a fantastic time, but it was a completely revolutionary time. And as we progressed through our music, you talked about opposition before, but boy, and it was mainly, I have to say, Jim and Ian McNair, the bass guitar, they did a lot of listening and introduced me to Cream and Eric Clapton and John Mayall and John Heisman and Jimi Hendrix and all that kind of stuff. And I got myself, which I wish I still had, but I sold it when I was a student, a pre-65, a white Fender Strat. It was the best guitar I've ever owned. and I sold it for £200 way back then. I started getting into all of that kind of stuff, and we moved from being that kind of traditional three-part harmony, lead, rhythm, and bass, and drums band, into a kind of three-piece Cream-type band with me on guitar, Ian McNair on bass, and Jim on double drum kit. And that was a complete transition, and to begin with, people were still expecting the Pebbles. We eventually changed to our name, Deep Concern, which I still think is a great name.
It is.
People were still expecting the Pebbles, and what they got were these guys with bells and you know, floral shirts and tatty jeans and all sorts of frilly, you know, things with fringes on them, playing long instrumentals on drums and bass and guitar. And I mean, we initially, when we turned up, I remember one gig in Ayrtown Hall that was pretty full. It was a big venue, and just before us, I don't know if you remember this, Jim, but just before us,
yes,
were a group called the Blackwood Quartet. These were four guys, seemed really old to me. They were probably in their 30s, because we were in the, you know, our late teens.
Yeah.
And they were singing a four-part quartet, you know, four-part harmony quartet of Christian music. And we come on with Marshall stacks screwed up as high as they would go and blasted. And half the audience were cheering and the other half were shouting at us and walking out. And you know, we were just getting letters saying, this is great, letters saying you're of the devil. But I tell you this, that from our point of view, not only were we enjoying the music and we just played together all the time and got to know each other very well all the time, but we actually reached a whole load more people. We saw more people coming to Jesus and following Jesus than we did with the other stuff, because we were just in there where everyone was. And so we knew that this is the way we should go, and we knew that this is the way we wanted to go.
Well, my guests are George Hazel and Jim Fotherington from the band The Pebbles, and then Deep Concern. And I think, guys, we'll take a music break, and we'll come back. And I want to talk about, you made a great point there, George, about, you know, some of you're throwing the seeds out, and it's not going to always hit, you know, It's not always going to grow fruit, and sometimes there's going to be opposition to that. But I think it's so amazing to be able to talk to you guys that were there when that was really happening. So we'll be right back after this song, and we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about the power of music when we get back. So stick around. I'll be right back with Jim and George. And we're back with George Hazel and Jim Fotherington of the Pebbles, and later on of Deep Concern. And I'd like to say that also you can go to the 1960sChristianMusic.com website, and 1960s is numerical. And there's a just great amount of Christian beat music out there that you can listen to, and I highly recommend that. Guys, there's a bunch of questions I have, but right off the bat, I'd just like to know, talk about the recording process, how you did that, and how that whole process came to be, and talk about that, because it's always interesting, the recording process of any band.
Well, what happened, we started in 64, and in 1968, amazingly enough, we became an interest from some recording companies who saw an opportunity to record some Christian music of a different type. And in 1968, we got signed up by a London, England company called Marshall, Morgan & Scott. And they had a music division, and a small budget, shall we say, to do recordings, but they had enough money to allow us a top studio in Edinburgh in Scotland, and we recorded the whole album in a day. In fact, the very first song you played there was done in one take.
Wow.
So, that's how the budget had to run. We had a problem with a few other songs, and they took a bit more time. But that's how we got hooked up with this company. There was a problem, because by 1968, we were beginning to think that we weren't really reaching the kind of people we'd planned to reach. And that's when we thought, you know, the kind of stuff we're doing now is fine for playing in a church, but we need to move on to more rockier stuff, and we really want to get out there and reach the general population. And so by the time we'd recorded the album, we were beginning to change our mind, and not later on after that, we actually changed our name to Deep Concern. But what happened was, after recording the album, there was a long period of perhaps 7-8 months when we just wondered if this album was going to be released. And what had actually happened was, one of the songs on the album, we'd put used an old tune and put different words to it, our own words to it, actually. Now, we used a song called Yellow Bird High Up in Banana Tree, which was quite a different kind of song to what we were normally doing, and put different words to it. Now, this was a song that was covered by quite a lot of artists, but in particular, an American group called the Mill Brothers, who were a vocal quartet from Ohio. And that was a very popular song that they played, and it still is well known and is still available on YouTube. But the actual songwriter of Yellow Bird decided that he didn't like the idea that we'd used his tune but put different words to it. So he decided to say no to the recording company. No, you're not going to put that song on the album. Unfortunately, what actually happened was the album had already been pressed by that time.
Oh, wow.
On the assumption that the copyright would be okay and the songwriter would say, yeah, I'm all right with that. So what happened after pressing quite a lot of albums, they then had to withdraw it and take that particular album off the vinyl and do a repress, which cost them a lot of money. And it did, in fact, cost a lot of time, because, as I say, it wasn't released till, I think, late 68. And by that time, we were thinking, it's time to move on with our music. This really isn't representative of where we want to go. So that created a whole lot of problems. Do you remember that story, George?
I don't remember that at all, no.
Yeah. But that was the sea change, I think, really, in moving from music pretty much based within the church to playing music that was more in line with what the teenagers out in the big world were listening to. So we were very comfortable about moving over, but felt very uncomfortable that this company had spent quite a lot of money recording the album and then eventually releasing it, when actually the band no longer existed by the time they actually released the album.
Yeah, that's
and
sometimes...
Go ahead.
That's fine.
One of our great regrets is, because people keep saying to us, you know, Deep Concern were, you know, one of the best bands that ever heard. We never got a recording of Deep Concern.
Hmm.
There's nothing. I don't think we've anything, Jim, have we?
On that
band. That was a three-piece band. It was Jim, myself, and Ian McNair on bass. But just something else you might want to follow up on, John, is you asked earlier about how we progressed together. Through this time especially, when we were practicing, we were just improvising, sometimes hours. We would just play together. We would just do, you know, long lead guitar solos, drum solos, bass solos. Ian played the harmonica, and we would literally play together for hours, not knowing quite where it was going to go. And that's what made Deep Concern what it was, I think.
Yes, it was actually quite sad that the best band we'd put together was the band that didn't get the recording. But
yeah,
then, of course, that's the way it goes.
Well, you guys, you still have a chance. You can get together and do
it
again.
Yeah, we're still all here.
Yeah, I think that would be great because it's like one of these things that happens, you know. It's like meeting you guys is so awesome. And right now with music the way it is and the way that it is with the internet and with files, anybody can make music now with, you know, sending recordings back with the home studios and stuff. So guys, you can do this, and I'll be behind you. Don't you think that would be awesome?
One of the interesting thing one of the interesting things at that time is because we were right out there in the front line, because this was cream type music that we were playing, and we were certainly still playing in church clubs and whatever. I remember one venue in the middle of Glasgow, and it was the time of the gang wars in Glasgow, and Frankie Vaughan, who some of your listeners may remember from way back then, he was working with the gangs, and we were playing in this venue in the middle of Glasgow, and a fight broke out, and there was tables flying across as we were playing. I forget the name of the gangs. Jim will probably remember. Was it the Tigers or something? I don't know. And the same thing happened in Dundee. There was gangs up in Dundee. We played in a gig through in the west of Scotland, of Kilmarnock, and the band next door were Satanists, and they kind of confronted us outside. So we were right there in the front line. But we just had a great time playing together the kind of music we wanted, and we it was just a natural thing to talk to young people, not only about the music, but about our faith as well, because it wasn't false. We weren't doing it just to talk to them, but we were doing it because we loved the music, and they loved the music, and it was just so easy then afterwards to talk around a coffee or you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's priceless. And also, guys, talk about the songwriting for the band, how it progressed, and was that who did the songwriting? Was it certain people in the band, or did you guys work together? How did that work out?
Well, initially it was me and Ian McNair, as you'll see from the Pebbles album. But a star emerged, and that was Jim. Jim began to start writing, and he wrote some great songs. We also started doing some cover versions. We did a version of Child in Time. Ian did a version of the harmonica of Train Time. As I say, Jim, he can talk about that because he started writing. He played keyboards as well, and we progressed into that.
Yes, I think we stole a lot of songs from other people, really. By you know, George mentioned "Child in Time," which was a Deep Purple song, but we selected particular songs that were, you know, hits in the charts. So that when we played them, people coming in off the streets would say, "Oh, all right, I know this song, yeah." And what was very important doing the sort of ministry at the time was to connect with the people that were coming in. Now, this was a problem that didn't happen in the first sort of 4 years when we were mainly based in the church. But after that, when we went out to the bigger audience, as George was describing, playing stuff that material that the general punters out there could associate with was a great way of connecting with them. So not only were we writing a few songs ourselves, but selectively choosing other songs which were at that time either chart hits or successful songs on albums.
Yeah.
But as George was saying, you know, we were quite happy, although sometimes we're playing in some quite rough places, because once you leave the atmosphere of the church and the security of its surroundings, and you go out there into the big bad world, it is a very much different world.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yes, I can actually, I can remember, as George was saying, certain gigs we played out there where, you know, we actually had to get security as we went to the toilet, because it was a dodgy place to play. But that was fine, because what we were doing was the whole purpose of the gospel band was to reach others, not to play to people within the church, but to play out with the church. So
right.
It was
yeah.
great.
Well, we had some fun. We played in Dundee one time, I remember, and they siphoned our petrol. We ran out of petrol on the way home about 2 in the morning. So we thought, thanks very much, guys.
Oh, that's wild. Well, I have to ask this question. John Plater wanted me to ask the question. Where did the name The Pebbles come from?
Well, it came from the fact that David and Goliath, David picked 5 smooth stones or pebbles from the brook to take on the Goliaths of this world, and so that's where the name came from originally.
Oh, that's awesome. Now let's talk. One of the things I love talking to bands about, and musicians, and I think it's really awesome, especially at that time. Talk about your gear, George. You talked about the Strat that you had. What did you guys start off with, like guitar wise and amplification wise, when you were first starting, and then how it progressed when you were playing the blues rock music of like the Cream and that kind of stuff. You were
sure.
at that time using Marshalls. Talk a little bit about
the
gear.
Yeah, we started. We had nothing when we started off, and the first PA amplifier we got was a little box about 6 inches high by about 2 feet square, and you could look into it and see all the transistors and things. And there was a speaker that was about 6 inches by 2 inches. That was the PA. That was the speaker we got. We had a Reslow microphone. And so the singers were going through that. I originally didn't have an amplified guitar, but then I got this really terrible cheap guitar. We didn't have a bass guitar, and Jim's described his sort of first drum kit. And the breakthrough for me was that I didn't know very much about guitars then. We then all got the same guitars, which were Echo. In fact, I still got an old one, not the one I had, but I bought one when I saw it in a shop. It's a kind of hollow semi-acoustic electric guitar by Echo, and we got matching ones of them, a terrible guitar, but that was our next guitars. And then I bought this white Fender Strat, which was just the most wonderful guitar I've ever owned, and the Ian he began to take up the bass guitar, and he got himself a Fender Jazz, which he loved, and that's when we went through the period of Vox amplifiers and smaller amplifiers, but then when we transitioned to the blues and rock music, we had Marshall Stacks. And Jim had a Premier, Jim, a double bass drum kit.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I had the thing is you start off small and then you get very ambitious as the years go on, and you want better gear, and it's just part of the whole thing about being a musician, that whatever you have you want to improve on, and so gear was very important. But, yes, I can remember as teenagers, and probably the band was only going about 2 years at that time, I can remember standing outside this music shop with George in our hometown, and he had an amplifier which cost at that time £12, which is probably, in American money, it's probably about $20. And we would stare at this every Saturday morning when we went up to the music shop and say, one day we might just have that, you know. And in fact, what happened was, you know, parents decided to chip in some money. And so that amplifier was acquired by George, his first proper amplifier.
And I remember, my father was a joiner, a carpenter, and I was just thinking about this today, actually. I'd forgotten about it, that he actually made PA speakers, and we fitted speakers into it. I mean, the quality was terrible, but that was our first proper PA system. I mean, you didn't have things like mixing desks and what in these days. I mean, you had no fold back either. You just plugged in and you know, you just played. Later on, when we progressed, Jim and I have been in four bands, and Jim's still in a band, a really good band that does sort of pub cover versions. We did progress to a mix, you know, mixing unit and all fold back and all that kind of stuff. But in these days, that kind of stuff was unheard of.
Now, what do you guys think of how music has progressed? We talked about how I think it was just peaked at the 60s for me, and it was so amazing. Hey, there's so much going on with file sharing. We're talking about music now, and I'm writing some of the things down. I'll listen to that, you know, the things that you're talking about. I can do that on YouTube. You guys, we can listen to it. How do you think that has affected just the music industry and how we look at things? Because now, come to me and say, "Hey, John, if you listen to this," and I'll send me guys, and I'll listen to it, and I think that's a good. But a lot of it to me sounds the same as the ones I listen to, and I'm always looking for original chord changes, and I'm looking for something fresh and new. What do you think about the music that we're hearing today and the music that's being created today, whether it's secular music or it's Christian music? What's your take on that?
George, I'll let you go first.
I think that's really difficult, because in some ways, you know, once you've made the transition to the kind of electrified rock music, which came out of R&B and rock and roll and all that kind of stuff, in some ways, a lot of it is a variation on the same. Some of it is very new. And, you know, we went through the period of glam rock and punk rock and all that kind of stuff, jazz rock. And we got into people like Steely Dan, you know, kind of jazz rock bands later on. But a lot of that stuff, even now, some of the bands that are around, really good bands and really great music. But it's really hard. Depends what you mean by new, because it's really hard to think, well, all of it is a kind of derived from there, and it is advancing and it is changing, and some of it's going back. I mean, some of the stuff that somebody as old as us could say, oh, that sounds like the Small Faces, or that sounds like John Mayall, or that sounds like whatever. So,
right.
You know, you get some songs that are really quite novel, and some bands that are really quite novel. But it's I find it really difficult to answer that. I don't want to underplay. I don't want to do down any, you know, modern music, modern bands, because there's some great stuff out there and some great bands that I'm still really enjoying.
Right.
In terms of the Christian scene, again, there's some great stuff going on, but there's a segment that I think is interesting in the whole Christian scene. Is if you think what we described about, you know, reaching out and into society or whatever, and you made a distinction between Christians who are in a Christian band for a particular purpose and Christians who just happen to be in a rock band, and that's fair enough. There's loads.
Right.
of people who would say they're Christians and they're just in a rock band and that's it. And I think that's still true. And both are great. There is this other stream that has emerged that I don't think was quite the same in our day, and that's I would call it kind of a worship concert, where you get people leading worship, and as opposed to just leading worship in church, there's a big venue and a whole people worshiping and a band leading, and it's a crossover between a concert, a straight concert with a band,
right,
and the other end, which is just pure kind of worship in a church. And in the middle, I don't quite know how to describe it. That's, for me, that has emerged over the last, 10, 20, 30 years, which is an interesting crossover in the middle that's been happening. Jim, I don't know what...
John, I've been playing now. I'm on my 51st year on the drums.
Oh wow!
So I've seen quite a cross section of music over these years. I think there's an argument with some of my peers that the old music was the best, and I think it's just that there's a different skill set nowadays. In the old days, there were some great 3-minute songs written, which were absolutely fantastic. Some people had fantastic ability to write. But, even as I play in a function band now, and even modern stuff, very modern stuff, absolutely current stuff, is actually quite tricky to copy, because it's a different approach to playing. But, I think music today is as good but different to the music of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. One of the things for anybody listening to this that is not into the kind of 60s music or doesn't know much about it, the kind of thing I was trying to say, if you go back and listen to somebody like the Yardbirds or maybe the Zombies, That was kind of music. I don't know if you'd agree, Jim, or not. It was kind of music before its time, and it would almost fit into being played now. And some of it is dated. Some of it is undoubtedly dated and has transformed over the years. But there's always been this spectrum of fairly run-of-the-mill stuff, but just some outstanding stuff that kind of spans the years. And bands like that that Clapton came through, or Jeff Beck came through, or the great guitarists came through, are just so interesting to listen to now in the context of what's going on in the modern rock scene, happening way, 50 years ago.
Well, yes. Guys, it's been great talking to you. We're running out of time, and I wish we had more time. I just want to say thank you so much to George Hazel and Jim Farlington for being on the show tonight. Guys, thank you. It's been great, and I'm looking forward to a reunion of Deep Concern and you guys get in the studio.
Yeah, well, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Well,
John,
anything...
it's been absolutely great reminiscing and hearing these songs again. It's almost made me tearful.
Well, it just, to me, it's a great a blessing to talk to you guys and that was there during that particular time, which is an amazing time. So thank you so much, and we'll definitely have to do this again. And anything you'd like to say in closing?
Well, I'd just like to say, John, it's been a pleasure speaking to the people of America all the way from Scotland here. And George, I think you're in Canada, aren't you, at the moment?
I'm in Toronto at the minute, yeah.
Well,
I've just come from Detroit, and I just love coming over here to Canada and the U.S. And if it's been enjoyable for your listeners, then we're happy.
Well, it was very enjoyable for me. So thanks so much, guys, and we'll talk to you. And thanks everyone for listening to John Talk Radio tonight. And we just hope everybody has a safe evening and keep warm. And we'll talk to everyone later. And thanks, guys, so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you. could bring them back to God.